This podcast was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great local podcasts, go on our website freshfm.net or download the accessmedia.nz app.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is Judy Fisher. Judy was born in Egypt, attended boarding school in England, and has lived in several countries around the world. She is currently living in the Tasman region. Her first book, Off the Hook, which is a memoir, was published independently in May this year. Welcome to Fresh, Judy.
Thank you.
Right, now, Off the Hook covers 10 years of significant change in your life. Can you please tell us what led to instigating that change?
Well, it covers a 10-year period between two emails. The first was from my husband saying he wanted a divorce, which was not very nice to get in an email. And the second, 10 years later, almost to the day, was an email from a friend of mine saying that my application for residency for New Zealand had been accepted. And I was a New Zealand resident. And in the 10-year period, I changed from being a rather unhappy, dumped woman to being a quite intrepid solo traveller and a completely different person. And I thought it might be interesting to write it all down.
Right, what was your first reaction when you got that email?
I didn't even know he was seeing somebody else. And it was such a shock. It was such a shock. And I knew that he'd been unfaithful before and we were trying to work it out, but I thought we were doing well. We obviously weren't.
Right, but it wasn't an end. It was actually a new beginning, wasn't it?
No, it was great. If he hadn't done that, I'd still be being unhappy and stuck on Mauritius where we were living at the time. And here I am now with a completely different lifestyle, living in New Zealand.
Now, a lot of women who find themselves in that position, they either sink or they swim or fly, and you actually soared. Was that a conscious decision or...
Well, I went through a year or two feeling rather sorry for myself and I looked awful, I lost weight and I wasn't a pretty sight. And then I decided unless I got up and, you know, got on with life, I would just sink. And a friend of mine sent me an email saying, come on, we want you to come fishing with us in Alaska and it's going to be an adventure. And I thought, wow. Could I do it? I hadn't really travelled on my own before. Someone had always organised things. And I thought, yep, why not? And why not take a whole year out? And so I took a whole year to fish and wine taste and massage my way around the world because I'd done a massage course in the meantime while I was thinking what on earth I was going to do.
Okay, now as the book is based on your diaries and travel letters, how did you decide what to put in and what to leave out during that 10-year period?
That's difficult. During that 10 years, I'd sent travel letters to friends about where I was and what I was doing, and I kept diaries of more personal things. And the difficulty was putting the two together. And I had had help from a mentor, a literary editor, Caroline Lark, and she was just wonderful. And I would send off these chapters, and it would come back covered with pencil marks saying, what are you trying to do here? You know, take this out, put this there. And I thought, oh, God, and I thought I was doing okay.
And you feel it's a better book for your help?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. For example, she told me to use two tenses, which was very helpful, past tense and present tense. So the present was mostly dialogue or inner voice. And I learned how to write. I'd been on various writing courses and travel writing courses and things before, but actually putting it all down into a book took me 2 years in the end to do.
Right, so no matter how many courses you do, it really comes down to actually getting in and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you always kept a diary or?
Well, not always. I went on a course in Skiros in Greece once, and there they started us doing Julia Cameron, The Writer's Way, and I learnt to write every morning without stop for about 3 pages, just blob, whatever was there, I just blurted it out, put it down, and never looked at it again. And that's slightly different, but it was quite a useful reminder, and I hadn't looked at them until I decided to write this book, but I hadn't got rid of them, they were there in a box.
Now, what are some of the other writing things that you learned doing this book?
Oh,
way to begin and way to end?
Well, actually, I didn't start at the very beginning, and it's only a 10-year period, and I just put snapshots of my past life into it. And it all centered about me being a loaf of bread. And I was on this course in Skiros, and we were there, and we were relaxing, and the shutters came down, and you had to open up, and you had to say, well, what do you see? What object do you see? And I saw myself as a stale loaf of bread, a place where I was stuck in my life. And I used that as a metaphor through the book of where I was and how I changed over time. And that was kind of a hook. And then, of course, there was my fishing, because I'd learned to fish as well. And it became a fishing journal as well.
Right. Go back to the fishing. Was it fly fishing, bamboo, rod?
Everything. Everything.
Everything?
Everything. My husband, before we divorced, had given me a rod and hooks and things as a present. I didn't want it, wanted perfume, anything but a fishing rod. Anyway, my son-in-law was staying, and we went out in the boat, and I held his rod while he was doing something, and I caught a fish, and then I caught another fish. And I thought, wow, this is fun. This is easy. And I got hooked. Anyway, so I've done all sorts of fishing. And I don't want to become the best fisherwoman ever. I just want to try all sorts. And I've caught marlin and halibut, and I've fly fished. I still want to fish through the ice. And that's one type of fishing I haven't done on Lake Michigan in the winter.
Wow. You are becoming the female Ernest Hemingway with this big game fishing and everything. Now, along the way, you had lots of memorable experiences, and you would like to read from your book about one of those.
Yep. That first year, I decided to go travelling around the world. Well, you meet people when you travel. And this is my linking up with these friends who suggested I join them in Alaska on a fishing trip. "Welcome back to San Diego," yelled Daphne from her jeep outside the airport. "Good journey? Sling your bags in the back. Come on, jump in. We're going to put you to work right away." She and Gino owned and managed Sandy Beach Rentals, a holiday accommodation company. 14 homes on their books and the holiday season about to start. During the winter months, many of their properties were let to students, and these now needed a fresh coat of paint and refurbishment. I called myself the chalet girl. In other words, dog's body. I scrubbed floors, cleaned windows, moved furniture, and ignored jet lag. "Are you the person they picked up on a plane?" a tall, thin man accosted me one evening at a party in one of the rental homes. "I'm the chalet girl, here to help out for the season." "Well, I'm Larry. I hear you want to fish in Mexico. I might be able to help." "Wow, fantastic. My cousin runs a B&B near San Jose on the Baja Peninsula in Mexico. A great place, right on the beach. The fishing's excellent. I'll find the address for you tomorrow." What luck. You never know who you might meet at parties. The next day, I booked a holiday in Mexico. Larry said he'd be there at the same time and show me around. This man was flirting. I wondered if he had a wife. If so, I hadn't met her at the party. 5 days later, I flew to Seattle and on to Anchorage in Alaska. The advance party on a full fare ticket. Daphne and Gino planned to travel standby because they were airline staff. They'd bring their fishing rods packed inside a drainpipe. Daphne, a cargo handler before she became pregnant, was now off work on disability until the baby arrived. Not a safe job for an expectant mum. My task was to pick up the motorhome, ready for their arrival at 2 next morning. At 2:30, a loud bang on the door. Gino and Daphne, minus drainpipe, lost in transit. We hung around Anchorage for a day until the drainpipe was located and flown in. Our motorhome was freezing at night. In the bunk over the driver's sleep, I hit my head whenever I sat up. One night, I woke in a cold sweat from a nightmare. I'd eaten my baby granddaughter, reduced in size and hidden in a chocolate finger biscuit. I sat up too fast, whacked my head on the roof, yelped in pain, and woke the others. "Are you all right there?" sleepy Gino asked. "I've had a terrible dream about Olivia. I hope she's all right." "If you're worried, why not ring? It's daytime over there." I checked in with Alex. "We're fine here, Mum. You just enjoy your holiday." Relieved, I snuggled back to sleep. In Alaska for 8 days, we decided to concentrate on the Kenai Peninsula. Armed with licenses, we headed south from Anchorage to Homer, known as the halibut fishing capital of the world. On the way, we passed wide, fast-flowing rivers and sheltered inlets flanked by snow-capped mountains to arrive late at a parking area for official charters. A mother moose and her two offspring grazed in the parking area. I wandered over to them to stroke and take a photo. "Keep away! Come back! Don't go near the young!" Anxious shouts from my friends. I backed away. Don't know why I went over. I'm frightened of cows, and they're domesticated animals. And there I was, approaching a large, wild moose with her young. I wasn't thinking straight. Maybe the baby moose. Baby's on my mind. I missed my new granddaughter. The next day, we were at sea in a 28-foot aluminium boat with two powerful 160-horsepower engines. The charter boat took six people. When they saw two women, one pregnant, the four men on our trip groaned. I caught the first, a small 15-pound halibut, and then nothing. When we were told to pull in our lines, mine wouldn't budge. "Come on, Judy, stop playing the fool." "I'm not fooling, honest," I wailed. "Help her, Daniel," the captain said to his mate. With a broad smile, crew-cut Daniel bent double over the side of the boat as he tried to reel in my line. "Some fish she's caught. I need help." Everyone but me laughed. But the skipper knew he was serious. Eventually, it dawned on the others that I had a seriously big fish on the end of my line. Daniel passed the rod, told me to keep winding. A dead weight. Everybody looked over the side. My arms ached. I was hot and tired, but still the fish didn't surface. "Come on," said Daniel at last. "I'll take it from here." Exhausted, I was happy to hand over the rod. "She's hooked the dorsal fin and it's trying to swim away. Get the harpoon." That didn't work. Bill got out his gun. "Stand back, everyone. I'm going to shoot to kill." "You can't do that," I cried. "Have to. Very long. Could cause serious damage with its tail if we bring it on board alive." The halibut was too big for the fish box on deck. 179 pounds. And Daff and I were the only ones not seasick.
You certainly have had a lot of adventures. What are some of the insights that you gained during those 10 years that changed your perspective on life?
I realised I could manage on my own. I realised I didn't need someone to help me. I missed arms around me. I missed human touch. I missed the physicality of being married. But I could manage. It was fine. I met some wonderful, interesting people. I made friends all around the world. I went to places I'd never, ever have got to if I'd just been still stuck in an unhappy marriage. So it was actually the best thing that could possibly happen to me.
Yeah, your husband definitely did you a favour, didn't he?
He did indeed.
What was your motivation in writing the memoir?
I think because I'd been to Otago summer school, not on writing courses, and I needed to, "What's your project, Judy? What are you doing?" And I thought, well, I'll try and make this into a book and see if it works. But you know, putting travel letters and bits from a diary into a book, you need a lot of help and it's a lot of hard work. And I nearly gave up lots of times. Lots of times.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. Now, your next project sounds really, really exciting.
Yeah, it was interesting having heard Ian, the last interview you did. I've got these letters. They were love letters written from my uncle when he was interned in a prisoner of war camp in the middle of the desert in Algeria, imprisoned by the Vichy French. And I'm just looking at them, and he's written quite a bit about it himself. He died 50 years ago now. Can it be that long? But a long time ago. And I'm only just now looking at them, and I don't know why it's taken me so long. Anyway, that's the thought, but it needs a lot of research and a lot of thinking about how I would structure it. So it's early stages yet.
Because that's one thing about writing from diaries and travel letters, is actually structuring it into something readable that people can relate to. Now, do you think that people's diaries, even though they're dead, they should be published? Do you think we as the public have a right to know what these men went through? And
I do if it doesn't hurt anybody and anyone in the family. These are love letters, but both people have been dead long since. It's a dilemma. It's something I've got to work through myself.
I think a lot of people do go through that dilemma. Now, the song you have chosen today is Willie Nelson's version of Leonard Cohen's Bird on a Wire. I know it's obvious to some people, but tell us why it means something to you.
Well, Leonard Cohen, I love Leonard Cohen, went to see him when he came over in Christchurch a few years ago now. And so when I've had records, when I was on my travels through Africa, I was allowed to take 5 CDs, and one of these was a Leonard Cohen one. And this one, Bird on the Wire, is lovely. I've tried all my life to be free, and not all my life, but the last few years in my life, and it really resonates with me.
Right, let's listen to Willie Nelson's version of Bird on a Wire.
Like a bird on a wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like a worm on a hook, like a knife from some old-fashioned book, I have saved all my ribbons for thee. And if I have ever been unkind, I hope that you can just let it go by. And if I have ever been untrue, I hope you know it was never to you. Like a baby stillborn, like a beast with his horn, I have torn everyone who reached out for me. But I swear by this song and by all that I've done wrong, I will make it all up to thee. I saw a beggar leaning on his wooden crutch, and he said to me, "You must not ask for so much." And a pretty woman leaning in her dark door, she cried to me, "Hey, why not ask for more?" And like a bird on a wire, and like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy, for talking with us today. Off the Hook is available from Copy Press and Fish Pond. I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. This is the last interview in this session, but we will be back next year. A podcast of this program, upcoming events, and previous interviews can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Media Project. Other great podcasts from Fresh FM are available through the accessmedia.nz app or our website freshfm.net.